You've just tuned into Outdoor News Radio, a weekly showcase of the top outdoors writers and experts in Minnesota and across the region. I'm Outdoor News Managing Editor Rob Dreeslein, and I'm honored to have you join us for the next hour as we break down hunting, fishing, and natural resources topics affecting your ability to recreate in the Western Great Lakes and beyond. Our guests might challenge you occasionally, but we promise to entertain you while we're at it. Don't go away, because if you love this state's fine outdoor scene, you'll love Outdoor News Radio. This broadcast is brought to you by Ducks Unlimited. Join our volunteer team and be part of something bigger. Sign up at www.volunteerfordu.org. Hey folks, welcome to another week of Outdoor News Radio. Rob Dreeslein, thrilled to be with you for the next hour. We'll talk muskies a little deeper into this week's show. Aaron Meyer from the Minnesota Muskie and Pike Alliance will join us. We'll have Lesmeister later too, and probably squeeze another guest in at some point, but let's start it off with Tim Spielman. Tim, welcome, good to see you, and I don't want to spend a lot of time on the weather and on ice, but I think bottom line, there are probably feet of ice out there right now after that cold snap we had, huh?
Yeah, you'll have to ask somebody who actually went out fishing, but yeah, considering how much there was before that snap and considering the longevity of that snap, it's got to be, yeah, they might be putting the extensions on the Lake of the Woods augers at this point.
Lots of headlines, Tim, on your front page I want to talk about on this week's edition of Outdoor News. Pittman Robertson, I think, is always interesting. That's some of the excise tax money from ammunition that comes back to the states. You had a short story pointing out that it's down. Is it for the second year in a row? It was really up there for a few years when gun and ammo sales were going crazy. You know, I guess my question is, why is it down? Is it just, are we not buying as many guns and as much ammo as we were a couple years ago?
That fund is kind of like crappie populations. They're great until they're bad. And you could point, I didn't really bring it up in the story because it's been told before and some people get tired of the politics. But you look at after elections or re-elections, when Obama was re-elected, I'm trying to think of another one. Maybe it was, I don't think it was far back as the Clinton years, but usually that's kind of what spurs them on, is the threat or the thought in people's minds that there's going to be some sort of gun control, or there's going to be some sort of the shortage on ammo drove things crazy, as you can remember a few years ago. I'm sure people still have ammo stored up in their basement somewhere.
Yeah.
It's just really finicky that way. And it wasn't a huge drop this year. And I think it was predictable, I should say. You know, it went from 34 a couple of years ago. And I don't know, maybe that was still a little of the old COVID hangover thing. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure. Yeah. Who knows? You need a psychologist to figure out Pittman Robertson. But it dipped down to 26 million, which is, it's still up there. You know, when you look at past years, it's not like the bottom fell out. People are still hunting. There's a lot of shooting sports going on. People are buying their guns. I mean, there always will be a demand. As a person who attends a few banquets and has one of my own in the local town here, nothing beats a good gun on a
raffle
at a banquet.
Yeah,
a raffle. Yeah, exactly. So yeah, I don't think the bottom will ever fall out. It's just, you know, it ebbs and flows like it normally does.
Yeah, yeah. It's just natural resources departments have to adjust their budgets probably.
Yep.
You know, when it does go into some of those valleys. Natalie Ryder had a story that the legislative session is off and running, or stumbling, maybe is a better word for it. Not a lot to talk about yet, Tim. There are a few. There's some bills that have already been introduced, and I kind of chuckled going through the bullet points. It's like you got Steve Green, a Republican from up north, writing kind of some anti-wetlands kind of bills, or concerns about how we're spending conservation money. You got, looked like a metro legislator with, you know, let's give the tribes back some land, one of those bills. We got Drazkowski down in Mazeppa with the shotgun, eliminating the shotgun zone in the southern half of the state again. Kind of right back to where we were any other session. The makeup of the legislature is a little different, so maybe that'll affect what passes and what doesn't.
Maybe. I didn't realize so many bills that had been introduced till I saw Natalie's story with, like you said, the bullet points. And it's like Twilight Zone almost, you know, it's the shotgun zone has been around forever and forever. Mm-hmm. What happens with that? Who knows? And the Red Lake State Forest transfer of land is, I think, identical to last year's. And the only reason there aren't House companions is because, well, there's only half the House members are there right now as we speak anyway.
Right.
Yeah. And I don't know if House bills are worth introducing or not, because everything is in such great limbo that who knows if someone can predict how this comes out. I want them to be my friend, and we can split the money that they'll make predict everyone's future.
But I hope they just get this resolved quickly so we can move on and try to get some work done over there at the state capitol. You listen to Outdoor News Radio. Rob Dreesen and Tim Spielman kicking off this week's broadcast. Tori McCormick had a good little story talking about the farm bill. This is something we talk about frequently. We're operating, what, Tim, off extensions? Is that right? We haven't had a full mm-hmm. passage of a farm bill. And when was the last one?
I'm trying to remember now, Rob. 2018, I thought, was the last one that was supposed to be. And that one might even have been late. You lose track after a while because they're always late.
That makes sense. It's probably been 5 or 6 years till the next one was supposed to pass, and now we've been operating on these one-year extensions. And the latest one-year extension does not include money for the federal walk-in program. Do I have that right? And there's some money for the state program now. It's not going away in the near future. But that's really some boots on the ground kind of ramifications, practical ramifications for hunters out there if that program runs out of federal money.
Right, I do recall at Pheasant Fest, was it last year? There was a farm bill talk when it was in Minneapolis, and I think the access program that we're talking about has been funded annually to the tune of about $50 million. And I do recall, and Tori mentioned in his story too, that there was a push to increase that to $150 million, probably to expand it to other states, maybe grow it in other states. Minnesota, we've seen a plateaued at our 30,000 acres, and the good news is that even though there's not funding in this farm bill extension, according to the DNR, we do have enough dollars for the next 2 years. So assuming that things settle down, settle down being relative in Washington, and maybe we can get around to doing a farm bill and we can get that money back, I don't think the Minnesota program is in great jeopardy right now, but it's always nice to know that the money is going to be there. And that's not the only way it's funded in Minnesota, but it is probably it's the primary way it's funded, because people do pay that $3 surcharge to hunt on those mm-hmm. walk-in access acres.
I'm curious if a farm bill will get done this year. I guess the pessimist in me would suggest that Republican Congress won't make it a priority. But then again, maybe it's the sort of thing they'd feel like they can get done, and they can probably get some Democratic support and push it through. So maybe this is the year we actually put together a farm bill.
I wouldn't doubt if it did. The Republicans in Congress are going to get their way, and something of this magnitude, maybe conservation won't be at the top of the list, but it'll be part of the farm bill as it has been. And the farm bill is so much more than conservation, of course, and so much more than farming, of course. It's the lion's share is the SNAP program, the nutrition titles. Mm-hmm. And I know there when we talked about the farm bill last year, That was a sticking point, and there were points that you would say that's predictable to come from the left, and that's predictable to come from the right. And if the right has the Republicans have their way with matters, they could get that thing done in a hurry too.
Your column, Tim, talked a little bit about the changes in Washington this week. So we had a confirmation hearing for Doug Burgum last week. He's the nominee for the Secretary of Interior. I think that one was relatively non-controversial. He made some public land comments, Tim, that, It made me pause a little bit. He said something like, you know, I'll read you the quote. He said, not every acre of federal land is national park or wilderness area. Some of those areas we absolutely have to protect for their precious stuff. That's an exact quote. But the rest of it, this is America's balance sheet. And, you know, I don't disagree with most of that. We need to be using the resources on our public land. I get a little worried because I've heard about murmurs of putting housing divisions on, you know, some public lands and selling public lands for that. And if that's where we're talking about a balance sheet, you know, selling off public lands for subdivisions so we can throw a little cash temporarily in federal coffers, that gives me a hard pause.
Yeah, that's a little on the short-sighted side of things. So, yeah, I haven't read a whole lot. You know, I watched what was going on yesterday, and it didn't seem like issues that we talk about were very high on the executive order list.
Right.
But there are things, you know, we always talk about wolf delisting.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we'll make some progress there. Then again, you know, it's not like you can blame Democrat administrations for that because they've been delisted under past Democrats,
that's
too.
True.
It's just
yeah.
I don't know what it is. It'll be ongoing long after you and I are gone. But there's that. Maybe something will happen. And I've already read, I think, about 18 press releases regarding concern about the boundary water. So
yeah, I see McCollum has her bill out again to protect the watershed. I'm sure Stauber will have his dueling bill doing the opposite very soon. So here we go again with the boundary waters, wolves, all these sorts of issues. All right, Tim, well, out of time, but thanks for spending a segment with me, and we'll talk to you next week when it's going to be a little warmer.
Sounds good.
All right, Tim Spielman, editor at Outdoor News. Let's break more of the broadcast after these messages.
Let's fish. Explore over 350 booths, over 20 seminars, and a dozen boat dealers at the Wisconsin Fishing Expo February 21st through the 23rd at the Alliant Energy Center, Madison. Deals from legendary manufacturers and unique vendors not found in stores. Kids' activities include the trout pond, casting competitions, bow fishing, kids bingo, and more. Free giveaways every day. WIFishingExpo.com for details. Sponsored by Wisconsin Outdoor News, Daiwa, Don's Marine, Acme, and Mag's Rods.
Your land is your legacy, but keeping it healthy and thriving means caring for it now and in the future. The Family Forest Carbon Program can help you do right by your land with guaranteed income, help developing a forest management plan, and advice from experts. If you own 30 acres or more of forest land in Michigan, Wisconsin, or Minnesota, you may be eligible to enroll in the Family Forest Carbon Program. Visit familyforestcarbon.org and enroll today.
Ice fishing is here, and it's time to hit the frozen water with the Onyx Fish app. Use the Fish app to find new places to fish and sort lakes by species, abundance, trophy, and keeper potentials. Onyx Fish also shows you hotspots, lake-by-lake regulations, and private and public land ownership information. For a limited time, download Onyx Fish for free in Minnesota and Wisconsin. Or head to onyxmaps.com/fish to get more information on the app that's changing the game on ice.
Our outdoor heritage is at a crossroads. Fewer hunters and anglers means less support for the wild places we love. The Outdoor News Foundation is changing that story, one young person at a time. For just $25, you can give a child a year of outdoor knowledge via scholarships, learning camps, and access to OutdoorNews.com. Help us create a legacy for tomorrow's hunters and anglers. Visit OutdoorNews.com/foundation to get involved, learn more, and donate today.
Did you know 22 Americans die each day waiting for organ transplants, most of them for kidneys? The good news is that MatchingDonors.com is helping to change that. MatchingDonors.com is a 501c3 nonprofit organization that links organ donors with people in desperate need of kidneys and other transplants. And now you don't need to donate a kidney to save a life. You can donate your boat, car, or real estate, with 100% of the proceeds going to help save the lives of people needing organ transplants. Visit MatchingDonors.com or call 800-385-0422.
Every 2 seconds, someone special needs blood. A friend, a family member, a coworker. Someday, it could be you. In fact, right now, patients in local hospitals are relying on Memorial Blood Centers to be there with the blood they need to survive. And that means we're relying on you to step up and make a life-saving difference. Make a date to help save a life. Visit mbc.org today to make an appointment to donate blood. That's mbc.org.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the broadcast. Rob Gerisline with you here for another segment. Thanks for tuning in. Hope you like the chatter here. If you do, check us out online at outdoornews.com. You can subscribe to our print or digital versions via that website or call us at 800-535-5191. Would love to hear from you. Hey, I mentioned the DNR Roundtable was a couple weeks ago, January 10th already. It's already in the rearview mirror. But I sat in on a fairly interesting session during the roundtable on muskie management here in our fine state. There were a couple of DNR folks on hand, as well as my next guest, Aaron Meyer. He is one of the co-chairs with the state's Muskie and Pike Alliance, and we're happy to have him now. Aaron, thanks a lot for carving out some time for me.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
First, tell us a little bit about the Muskie and Pike Alliance. A lot of folks are familiar with Muskies, Inc. What's your niche?
The Muskie and Pike Alliance is sort of an offshoot off of Muskies, Inc. from, we've been in existence now for 25 years or so. And really, if you know how Muskies, Inc. works, it's similar to other, say, Ducks Unlimited, Pheasants Forever, where they're individual chapters underneath a larger organization. So they kind of operate independently. And the Muskie and Pike Alliance was built to bring all those voices together, to have one more unified voice for muskie management in Minnesota.
So I wrote a story this past week talking about this session at the roundtable, and it provided a little background for how we got to where we are with muskie management. One of the DNR people during that session talking about how there's been sport angling for muskies going back to the late 19th century, and we all remember, or at least reports of the muskie rampage on Leech Lake in 1955. Then muskie populations, they're slow growing fish. They just couldn't keep up with the pressure until we got stocking programs going, right?
Correct.
So we had, the shoe pack strain for a number of, how long did that go? A couple of decades, and now we're stocking the Leech Lake strain. Those get a whole lot bigger?
Yeah, I couldn't really tell you the real numbers and specifics on the shoe pack strain. They're also a native Minnesota strain, but they're basically from Shoe Pack Lake. And as it turned out, the Leech Lake or, Mississippi strain, which was actually more widespread and native anyways, grows faster and gets bigger.
And I don't necessarily expect you to know this, but I believe is Wisconsin stocking that Mississippi strain now too?
I believe there are some cases that they are. They stock several different strains there. They have a couple different native strains. They have the Great Lake strain, but I do believe that they're using some Mississippi, Leech Lake strain in some cases to try to get bigger fish.
So, Aaron, we had a nice run with muskie fishing in the 1990s, early 2000s. It seems like we really kind of hit our stride with the Leech Lake Mississippi strain. It kind of peaked. And then what happened? I think a lot of muskie anglers like yourself feel like the quality of muskie angling in Minnesota in 2025 isn't as good as it was 15, 20 years ago.
Yeah, that's definitely correct. Statewide, it's really gotten a lot tougher to the point where, honestly, anglers are leaving the sport or just going to Canada. It's a long, kind of complicated explanation, but really there just weren't a lot of good opportunities for anglers, across the state. Most of those native fisheries had been pretty well decimated. So the stocking program really was what brought the fishery to the public, made it accessible again. So the growth in muskie angling exploded right at the same time as the populations in all these lakes peaked. I mean, it's really a simple, it's like the old movie quote, if you build it, they will come. When there's a fishery, anglers will come. And so that's what happened in the late 90s, early 2000s. We had all of these stocked fisheries peaking. The popularity of the sport also just skyrocketed. A few things we the DNR didn't necessarily know at the time was, you know how to create this fishery, but do you know how to maintain and sustain that population, right? Mm-hmm. And what we're finding out is a few things biologically and also, under the pressure of angling. How they built these fisheries doesn't necessarily translate to a long-term sustained fishery. So now we're looking at different methods of stocking and management in order to maintain quality fishing.
Quick editorial point. Yeah, Jack Burns used to write for Outdoor News back in the day. I don't know if you ever met Jack or if you remember him, but I remember talking to him about, yeah, if you want to go have great muskie fishing, do you go to Canada? You know, where do you go? And he kind of laughed. He said, go to a lot of the Minneapolis lakes and you can catch fish almost as good as you're going to catch up in Canada. That was good looking back at the heyday. But back to the stocking, what it sounds like what the DNR has found is we want to start stocking bigger fish, yearling fish. Those are fish that spend an extra year in the pond growing larger because what it sounds like we just get a lot better survivability of those larger stocked muskies than we do with an 8 or 10 incher, huh?
Yeah, that's right. There's a few things involved in that too. But yes, generally speaking with any fish, really, the bigger they are when you stock them, the higher their survival rate. What we're finding is a few things. The first one being that with the crazy climate that we've gotten now in the last 10 to 15 years, raising and growing quality size muskies has gotten much, much harder. Mm. And it used to be that the DNR, they always knew bigger fish were better. It used to be that a 10-inch muskie fingerling was kind of bare minimum as far as what they wanted to put in a lake. And it's really gotten to where in a lot of cases, those 10-inchers are hard to grow now. We're not consistently getting 10 inches, even much less greater than 10, where we used to be stocking 12, 13, even 14 inch fingerlings. So those fish just survived a lot better and they're not able to grow those fish consistently anymore. And then the other part of it is, you know, there's predation. There's always predation. So that's one of the reasons why bigger is better. And the other one is just simply stress on those little fish. But with the inconsistency of growing those fish, what we're looking at is the only way to really consistently get bigger fish is to carry them over to the following year when they would be, you know, classified as yearlings. And by that point, they are going to hopefully surpass that 13, 14 inch threshold and actually survive when you put them in the lake.
You listen to Outdoor News Radio. Rob Gerisline here. We're chatting with Aaron Meyer. He's a co-chair of the state's Muskie and Pike Alliance. We're talking a little bit about Minnesota's muskie plan, looking forward to trying to recapture the glory days of muskie fishing in our fine state. Now, a lot of muskie advocates felt like maybe the DNR wasn't paying as much attention to muskie management as it should have for a better part of the past 15 years. During your comments at the roundtable, you, I think, pretty strongly suggested you feel like we've turned the corner. We've got a muskie plan that's coming together here in 2025. And you sounded much more optimistic, I would say, about the outlook going forward. Is that a fair summary?
Yeah, it is. It is. The whole fishery was really built on a collaboration between the anglers and the DNR. And Minnesota DNR, when they commit to something, honestly, they do a fantastic job. It did seem like, you know, for maybe a decade or so now that they'd kind of pulled away from trying to do anything positive in the muskie world when we had been telling them, in some cases since 2010, that these fisheries have been going downhill. And it just seemed like we don't expect everything to go our way. They're not sure out there just to do our bidding. But when the fishery is failing, that's their job is to try to bring that back. And it does feel like just in recent, within the last year, honestly, that we're kind of seeing a renewed commitment. They're actually coming out with goals that they've got ideas and things that they know can help if we can accomplish them moving forward.
Good. Yeah, that's definitely a step in the right direction. There were some comments about forward-facing sonar at the end of the meeting. There were a couple comments, several comments. It's definitely on the minds of muskie anglers, isn't it? This live sonar allows folks really of any skill level. You don't have to be an old school muskie angler who knows all the nuances of the species to go and find these big individual fish and catch them. That's a problem where no one seems to have a solution to just yet, do they?
No, nobody really does. We are certainly looking at it. We're having more and more conversations, trying to pull in ideas and see how you address it. It really is the elephant in the room right now. And it's certainly going to fairly quickly impact things like muskies and, in my opinion, large walleyes too. But down the road, it's going to affect all of the fish in the fisheries. It's not necessarily a problem with the technology itself. It's the implementation of it and how you use it and where you use it. And these big fish go out and spend a lot of time out suspended in open water. And we always knew they were there and we knew we could target them, but it was really a needle in a haystack type of a proposition. Mm-hmm. And this technology turns that into a neon sign in a hay field.
Yeah, exactly. And even though musky anglers practice catch and release, even the new young guys, folks using this technology, any fish can only handle being caught and released so many times, right?
Yeah, you know, there's not really a defined number there, but absolutely. Every time you handle a fish, even if you know how to handle them properly, you're putting stress on that fish. Mm-hmm. And how many times can it go through that? And especially how many times can that happen when that fish is in what used to be their last remaining refuge, right? That open water space where they could go out and basically disappear. And now those are the easiest fish in the entire lake to find.
That's amazing. No, that's totally amazing. Well, Aaron, thanks for spending a segment with me. Thanks for being an advocate for musky angling. If folks want to know more about musky fishing or the Alliance, what can they do? Where can they go?
We do have a website, though we're not great at updating it and keeping it constant. We're more worried about fishing and fighting for the fish, but it is mnmusky.org. You can also look up myself or John Underhill. We are the co-chairs. We're both on Facebook, and we do have a Musky and Pike Alliance Facebook page as well. And in addition to that, if anybody knows people within their local Musky Zinc chapter, those people know how to contact us.
Absolutely. And those Musky Inc. guys, they're real helpful too. So lots of opportunities if you want to get into the sport of musky fishing, which a lot of people have done over the past quarter century. Aaron, again, thanks for joining me. I know you can't wait for open water and that musky season to open again, but go out and enjoy some hard water angling before that happens, huh?
Oh, yeah, we'll do. Thanks, Rob. All right,
you bet. Aaron Meyer from the state's Musky and Pike Alliance. We are going to grab a break. More of the broadcast after these messages.
Clam Outdoors has what ice anglers need for ice fishing this winter. From portable fish traps and pop-up hub shelters to ice armor by Clam Outerwear and cold weather gear to stay warm on those cold winter days. Along with a wide array of accessories, Clam Pro Tackle, Frost Ice Line, rods, reels, and combos, and so much more. Whether you're a hardcore or casual ice angler, Clam has what you need for ice fishing. Check out the full line of ice fishing gear at clamoutdoors.com.
Let's fish! Explore over 350 booths, over 20 seminars, and a dozen boat dealers at the Wisconsin Fishing Expo February 21st through the 23rd at the Alliant Energy Center, Madison. Deals from legendary manufacturers and unique vendors not found in stores. Kids' activities include the trout pond, casting competitions, bow fishing, kids' bingo, and more. Free giveaways every day. WIFishingExpo.com for details. Sponsored by Wisconsin Outdoor News, Daiwa, Don's Marine, Acme, and Mag's Rods.
Your land is your legacy, but keeping it healthy and thriving means caring for it now and in the future. The Family Forest Carbon Program can help you do right by your land with guaranteed income, help developing a forest management plan, and advice from experts. If you own 30 acres or more of forest land in Michigan, Wisconsin, or Minnesota, you may be eligible to enroll in the Family Forest Carbon Program. Visit familyforestcarbon.org and enroll today.
Is a trip to Alaska on your bucket list? It's time to dump that bucket and buy your ticket. And while you're there, fish the Kenai River with Jason's Guide Service. Jason is considered the best when it comes to catching Alaskan salmon, rainbow trout, and char. He's one of only a few guides that has the permit to fish in the Kenai National Wildlife Refuge, where the salmon are easy targets and the trout and char are plentiful. So cross that Alaskan fishing trip off your list and check out jasonsguideservice.com. That's jasonsguideservice.com.
Love the great outdoors? Then you need outdoor news in your life. Outdoor News is your go-to source for local hunting and fishing intel, conservation news, and outdoor adventure stories. Stay informed on seasons, limits, and the best spots to cast your line or set up your stand. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, Outdoor News has something for every outdoor adventurer. Subscribe today. Visit OutdoorNews.com or call 1-800-535-5191 to get started. Outdoor News, supporting the outdoor community since 1968.
I'm Chris Jakimick. I served in the United States Air Force and I deployed 3 times. being a veteran, it's interwoven into your DNA, is really the absence of the connection and the purpose that can really drive a lot of veterans to some negative thoughts. For those who are in a suicidal crisis, the window of time to save somebody's life is very short. Our duty is to protect ourselves and protect our families. And one way you can do that is store your weapons safely. Store all your guns securely. Help stop suicide.
Brought to you by End Family Fire and the Ad Council.
Hey, everybody, welcome back to Outdoor News Radio, and thank you for tuning in to the broadcast. Hope you like what we chat about here. If so, visit us online at outdoornews.com or give us a call at 800-535-5191. You can subscribe to our print or our e-edition or our web versions behind a paywall to get all the same content however you want it. I'm a big public lands advocate. Dedicated listeners to this broadcast know that about me. And something I failed to talk about very much last year when it became available, I believe this parcel opened to the public in October, is the Keystone Woods Wildlife Management Area. This is in Washington County, big chunk of property, over 1,800 acres near the metro, and that's a pretty big deal. The Department of Natural Resources has taken some public comment on how to manage that property into the future. And here to join us, talk about the property a little bit and this public review process is Kelly Ferris. Kelly is the Keystone Woods WMA coordinator. Kelly, are you out of the Forest Lake office?
I am. Office out of Carlos Avery here.
Gotcha. Well, thank you for joining us. Appreciate you carving out some time to talk about this. Let's talk about the property a little bit. Do I have it right? It officially opened to the public last fall. Tell us a little of the history. Was there one owner? Did the DNR piece this together from several parcels? Give us a little background.
Yeah, so Keystone Woods Wildlife Management Area was previously a cattle ranch. It was formerly owned by the Kelly Land and Cattle Company, and it was owned by them since 1958. It is one of the largest tracts of undeveloped land remaining in the Twin Cities metro area. It is located in north central Washington County in Hugo and May Township area of the metro. It contains a variety of habitats, including hardwood forests, woodlands, rolling hills of grasslands and prairie. There's some small lakes and numerous wetlands throughout the property. It provides important habitat for game and non-game species, things like deer, waterfowl, wild turkeys, small game and pheasants, and species of reptiles, amphibians, songbirds, raptors, all the like.
Well, how far would you say it's from like downtown St. Paul? 25 minutes? Is it that close?
Yeah, probably about 30-ish. Okay. Yeah, somewhere in there from downtown St. Paul.
Yeah, you were telling me off air the nearest community, probably Marine on St. Croix, that, like you say, the Hugo May Township area, probably less than 10 miles from the St. Croix River. A remarkably large, contiguous parcel, too. It's not like, you know, I looked at the map. It's not like one of those parcels that's like a snake, you know, that's all piecemealed together. You know, there's the interior of this is probably pretty remote from roadways. Will some reclamation work be required on this property? Is that already underway, or did that happen last year? What's the state of the property now? Does it look like kind of a beat up old cattle ranch, or is habitat work already underway?
Trust for Public Land purchased the property with the help of the Outdoor Heritage Fund and transferred the land to the DNR, which was finalized in the fall of 2024 and designated as a WMA. Prior to the transfer of land to the DNR, buildings and other structures were removed and such. Some fences have been removed. There was a lot of fencing out there. Some of it will remain around the perimeter, but there is still a lot more work to do, but it is open to the public, as you said. There's some parking areas available as well.
Were there any tie lines on this property? I mean, if it was livestock, typically, I wouldn't think so that there would be tile lines. Tile, of course, is drainage. We see that in western Minnesota when the DNR acquires a new piece of property out there. Lots of times they'll bust up the tile lines to prevent that drainage because we want water on the landscape. We want ponds and that sort of thing. I'm just curious, was there much for tile lines to get busted up on this parcel?
Yeah, I don't believe there was any tile that was found on the property. And the wetlands, there's over 400 wetlands on the property, and they are in very good to pristine condition at this time.
So has the staff, DNR staff out of the Forest Lake office already, you know, initiated some habitat projects on the parcel, replanting prairie, that sort of thing?
Yeah, we have project planning in the works. Some restoration work is underway, and then also in the works starting this, hopefully next spring. There is a lot of planning yet to do. It will take time to implement everything.
What is public access like right now? How can someone get into the property? Is it just from the perimeter, from parking lots along the outside of the parcel? Is there a road bisecting it? If I want to get in there and go hunting, do I put on a pair of good boots and tromp in there? Or how are people accessing the property, I guess?
Yeah, so there is temporary parking areas available. The property is located off Manning Avenue or County Road 15 in Washington County, and at the intersection of that and 170th Street North, which is also County Road 4. So there are three temporary parking areas, one on the east side of Manning off 155th Street, and then two on the west side of Manning, one just north of 155th Street. And then further north from there, there is an access to Barker Lake. And there's a temporary parking area down that road partway. So park there, and then you're able to walk in and access as you want.
1,800 acres. I got to think there's some places on this property that feel fairly remote. Have you tromped around out there yourself, Kelly?
I have tromped around out there. We had to post the boundary of the WMA last fall, so I've been around most of the perimeter of it and through the woods and the grasslands, and it does feel very remote. If you drive down Manning Avenue, those rolling hills of grassland kind of stand out at you.
Excellent. You're listening to Outdoor News Radio. Rob Gerisline chatting with Kelly Ferris. She is the Keystone Woods WMA coordinator. We're talking about this great new piece of public lands kind of north and maybe a little east of the Twin Cities metro area. Really an incredible coup for the state of Minnesota acquiring a property of this size so close to the metro area. So there's a public input process underway right now, Kelly. What is there, I guess, to input? The DNR has the property. What are you asking the public to offer their comments on?
Yeah, so the public input process opened January 16th, so last Thursday, I guess, and it's open until March 2nd. The input opportunities include an online survey. That survey can be accessed from our Keystone Woods WMA page, or you can search on the DNR website and just put Keystone Woods in the search. That'll bring you to that. There's an online webinar from 6 to 8 p.m. on February 12th. The link to that webinar is also on that Keystone Woods page. There will also be an in-person public meeting from 6 to 8 p.m. on February 13th at the Hugo City Hall, or by emailing and calling the North Metro Wildlife staff and submitting comments there. There's been a lot of interest in this property and the use of the WMA. The public input process is kind of a formal way to collect feedback, and we're looking for input to help prioritize some of the opportunities that will be offered out at Keystone Woods, things that would align with the intent and the primary purpose of the WMA, like habitat protection, restoration enhancement, wildlife production, and opportunities for hunting, trapping, fishing, wildlife viewing, and other compatible recreational uses. There may be some things that are not compatible that, people are looking for, like motorized recreation trails. But we're looking to kind of prioritize kind of where to go, where to start, and what the future will look like.
Again, you go to mndnr.gov, search Keystone Woods WMA. You can get real simple access to all the input opportunities that Kelly just mentioned. I'll throw them out here right now, however. Email northmetro.wildlife@state.mn.us, or you can call the Keystone Woods staff at 651-539-3324. Again, you're taking public comments until Sunday, March 2nd. What happens then? Can you give us a little timeline on what folks can expect to happen with all this public input?
Yeah, so like I said, we'll work through the public input process and the public meetings. Public input will help prioritize the plans for the property. Implementing it will be depending on staff time and funding and resources that are available.
Kelly, did you notice, did the property get much use this past autumn and this winter? I mean, there's still, I presume folks could still go out there and hunt squirrels or rabbits as we speak. Is the property getting some use?
Yes, it is getting a lot of use. We kind of monitored parking areas throughout the fall seasons, throughout hunting seasons, and now there's a lot of use for ice fishing and the like, like Barker Lake area. There's a lot of interest in getting out there and fishing as well. So I don't think I go there very often where there's not a car or two or four in any one of the parking lots. So
presumably that's going to increase as the word gets out about the availability of this incredible new piece of public land. Kelly, I got to think it's pretty gratifying working for the DNR on a project like this, seeing a new piece of public land that you can help mold and work on the habitat and see the fruits of your labor in terms of the general public enjoying it.
It is. It's a awesome piece of property. I'm just happy that, you know, it is now in public ownership and looking forward to what it looks like in the future.
Good. Well, I got to get out there and check it out myself. Well, Kelly, thanks so much for carving out some time for me. Good luck with the public input process. I got to think as public input processes go, this one's going to be pretty positive, right? Everyone's got to be pretty happy about this.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what kind of input and feedback we get.
Well, good luck with it. Thanks for joining me.
Thanks so much. Have a good day.
Yeah, that was Kelly Ferris, Keystone Woods WMA coordinator, telling us about a public review process going on for that new piece of public land. Again, if you want to get involved, go to mndnr.gov and just search Keystone Woods WMA. With that, I'm going to grab a break. More of the broadcast after these messages.
Ice fishing is here, and it's time to hit the frozen water with the Onyx Fish app. Use the Fish app to find new places to fish and sort lakes by species, abundance, trophy, and keeper potentials. Onyx Fish also shows you hotspots, lake-by-lake regulations, and private and public land ownership information. For a limited time, download Onyx Fish for free in Minnesota and Wisconsin, or head to onyxmaps.com/fish to get more information on the app that's changing the game on ice.
The possibility of lung cancer can be pretty scary, especially if you're one of approximately 8 million current or former smokers at high risk. That's why SaveByTheScan.org wants you to know that now there's a breakthrough low-dose CT scan that can detect lung cancer early, and it only takes 60 seconds. You stop smoking, now start screening. For an easy quiz to see if you're eligible, visit SaveByTheScan.org. It could save your life. SaveByTheScan.org is brought to you by the American Lung Association's Lung Force Initiative and the Ad Council.
Have more success on the ice with the LiveScope Plus Ice Fishing Bundle LI from Garmin. Drill fewer holes, catch more fish. This portable live sonar bundle comes with the LiveScope Plus system, EchoMap UHD 93 SV display, and a lithium battery. All packaged in a case, making hole hopping a breeze. LiveScope Plus helps you find more fish with improved resolution, reduced noise, clearer images, and better target separation. Fill your freezer with fillets with help from Garmin. Visit Garmin.com or shop your local Garmin dealer today.
Our outdoor heritage is at a crossroads. Fewer hunters and anglers means less support for the wild places we love. The Outdoor News Foundation is changing that story, one young person at a time. For just $25, you can give a child a year of outdoor knowledge via scholarships, learning camps, and access to OutdoorNews.com. Help us create a legacy for tomorrow's hunters and anglers. Visit OutdoorNews.com/foundation to get involved, learn more, and donate today.
Every week, the pages of Outdoor News are filled with articles and features that hunters and anglers throughout Minnesota can use. But did you know that you'll also find recipes and wild game cooking tips in Outdoor News? We work with top chefs who hunt and fish themselves to bring you solid recipes for preparing your wild game. Check out the Outdoor News Taste of the Wild cooking feature in the pages of Outdoor News and the archive of recipes online at OutdoorNews.com. Call 800-535-5191 to subscribe to Outdoor News.
Are you ready to hit the frozen waters and reel in some epic catches? The all-new OutdoorNews.com is your ultimate resource for all things ice fishing. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, OutdoorNews.com is the source for the latest tips, techniques, and gear reviews. Stay ahead of the rest with the most up-to-date ice conditions, fishing reports, and hotspots to maximize your success. Don't miss out on this incredible opportunity to elevate your hard water game. Visit OutdoorNews.com today and become part of the ice angling revolution.
Welcome back, everybody. Final segment of this week's broadcast of Outdoor News Radio. Rob Gerisline from Outdoor News here. If you like the chatter, please give us a call at 800-535-5191 and subscribe to the print or digital versions of Outdoor News, or you can do that at OutdoorNews.com. Tim Lesmeister is here now to help me bring it home. Tim, quite a few things to talk about. Not exactly sure where to start. We've got a new president. He issued a bunch of executive orders. One of them on a topic we had talked about, Denali. He quickly renamed it Mount McKinley. I think it's totally ridiculous. Your quick take?
Well, I'm going to be pondering this quite heavily while I'm sitting on the water out here in the Gulf of America, right, in a couple of days, because I'm going to be out there doing some fishing.
That was another one, yes.
Yeah, I'm going to go out of Hudson, Florida here in just a couple of days into the Gulf of America. And while I'm out there, I'm going to be pondering whether or not Mount Denali should be returned to its Mount McKinley. I actually think that the vast majority of Alaskans have always called it Denali. And I think that putting it back to the name McKinley is not really going to have much of an impact when it comes to the Alaskans. They're just going to keep referring to it as Denali.
Yeah, I wrote in my column a few weeks ago how every time I've been to Alaska, I mean, long before the official federal name change occurred, everyone up there called it Denali. I called it McKinley a couple times, and people corrected me. So everyone up there is going to continue to call it Denali. Why is this necessary? And again, you're talking about two guys who've never been there, McKinley and Trump, right? I'm pretty sure Trump's never been to Denali National Park, right?
I don't know if he has or not, but I'm guessing that I think he's doing this because he just wants to shove a needle into some of the old past presidents that made these changes.
Right.
He wants to just negate all of the stuff that these guys did.
Right.
It was Barack Obama that decided that it should be Denali. And I think he's just saying, okay, Barack, I'll show you. He's putting it back to McKinley. It doesn't make sense because, as we said, it's been referred to as Denali for as long as I can remember by my son, who's lived there for over 30 years.
Right. Right. As red meat for the base, I guess. Obama did this, so it must be bad, so I'll switch it. Although the state of Alaska, they officially changed the name in like the 70s, I believe. It goes back. And of course, prior to it being McKinley, that's what everyone called it, right? That was the native Alaskan name for the mountain, right?
It's been Denali a lot longer, and right. I mean a lot longer than it's been McKinley.
Anyway, all right, well, a little fun topic to kick off the segment. A couple other more serious things. We've talked a lot about forward-facing sonar, Tim, and we had an online opinion poll on that question. I think the way Spielman wrote it, there were three options. No, we don't need to regulate it. Leave it alone. Yes, it probably needs some regulation. And C, I can't afford one anyway. And it was like, I think 76% saying this needs some regulation. The other two were roughly evenly split by, you know, the remaining votes. I think we had over 50 or 60 votes on it. So, I mean, some people threw their hat into that online poll. I wrote about it a little bit more in a piece I wrote about muskie fishing. You know, it's still a small sample size, Tim, no doubt about it. But I do think there is some momentum out there to try to address forward-facing sonar. Jeremy Smith writing a piece for next week's edition of Outdoor News on the topic.
And, you know, it's the people that get involved in these polls are coming from the Outdoor News readership. So, you know, that they're fishermen, they're anglers. So, you know, that it's going to be a group of individuals that actually could or could not use this technology. So now we get into a situation where I look back at underwater cameras. I look back at regular sonar, side imaging, and the polls that were done back in the day, and some of these were not even polls, they were just conversations. Most people, I'd say, were about 50-50 split. This is not a 50-50 split. This is about 75-25 in favor of regulating this technology. So I think that anglers are looking at this and saying, yeah, we're getting to the point now where we're pushing the envelope, and maybe we need to do something about it. But what do you do? You know, do you restrict the technology? Or do you set limits on the amount of fish that you can take when using that technology? It's going to be tricky. And, you know, if you had a question on there, can I afford it? Or I'm not going to answer because I'm not going to be able to afford to put this in my boat. Oh, no, everybody's affording it right now. They're hawking all of their equipment, selling some of their guns. And they're putting this in their boats because they know with forward-facing sonar, it's going to improve their fish finding ability dramatically.
Outdoor News Radio, Rob Jerisan and Tim Lesmeister bringing it home. A fun little letter to the editor that I wanted to talk to you about. I know you saw it too. So was it last week's column I talked about, hey, if we're going to allow crossbows during the entire 105, 110-day archery season, let's at least get a little cash out of these guys. We had a letter writer who owns an archery shop who responded. I wasn't quite sure he understood my line of reasoning, Tim, or even my background on it. You know where I fall on this. I've never been a proponent of crossbows during the archery season. All I'm saying is it looks like they're here. The legislature's got to renew it, which I think is going to be a slam dunk. I don't think there's enough opposition to stop it. So can we at least squeeze some cash out of them? That was my point. I'll let you talk, Tim.
Well, and now we get this letter from an individual who literally has an archery shop in Minnesota, Prairie Archery. And he says that since they've allowed crossbows during the deer season, the archery deer season, he has not sold a single compound longbow. Everything that he's selling now is crossbows. But he doesn't sound satisfied with that. He doesn't like the idea that we don't have longbows going out the door or compound
vertical bows.
It's definitely a negative as far as he is concerned.
I think the concern among some of these archery shop owners is, yeah, you get a nice little pulse when this gets legal. Everybody wants one of these things. But then they last forever. They don't need a lot of tune-up. They're accurate out of the box. You shoot a couple bolts through them, you're ready to go. So I think the concern is, yeah, we're getting a nice pulse of sales now, but that's going to tank in the next year and in concluding years as everybody has their crossbow and everybody moves on from vertical bow hunting.
And like you said, you shoot a few bolts through it and you're ready for the season, whereas if you're shooting a compound bow, you're renting space in their lanes.
Yep.
And you're going there 3-4 times a week and you're practicing and you're adjusting your sight pins and you're practicing. This is generating cash for these guys. When you use a compound bow, you practice a lot if you want to be accurate with that bow. With the crossbow, you shoot a few bolts through it and you're ready to go.
Yeah, I mean, archery leagues were very popular in the winter among bow hunters who would, that's how they'd stay sharp throughout the off season, until spring came around, they could start shooting outside again. That was business for a lot of these small archery shops. Now, I don't want to jump to conclusions and suggest, you know, these archery shops are going to go out of business as a result of this. The archery industry in general has enjoyed riding the crossbow wave here for the past 5, 6, maybe 10 years as they've become more legalized across the country. But I think long term, there's concern that what is this going to mean for sales in the archery industry?
What do? You have a like muzzleloader season, have a separate crossbow season? Even then, I think if you did that, you'd see a lot of archers that would just say, hey, you know what, I'm a crossbow guy now. I'm just going to hunt those 10 days and that's it.
Tim, the genie's out of the bottle on this, right? There's no way we're going to eliminate crossbows from the general archery season. I after doing it for 2 years, I can't imagine we're going to go back. To me, the only way to salvage some of this is to squeeze some more money out of folks for a crossbow endorsement to at least help wildlife management in the state.
Yeah, it's a good idea. I think it's a great way to get, you said, some cash out of some of these hunters that decide to use crossbows so that we can get it back into the resources.
Did you agree, Tim, that the genie's out of the bottle? We're not going back on this?
Yeah, at this point here, you can't go to many states that don't allow crossbows pretty much through the entire archery season. So it's just a matter of time. Everybody's going to have their compound bow, their crossbow, their rifle, and the deer don't stand a chance.
It just seems like once you allow new technology, same as forward-facing sonar, it's very hard to restrict it again. Yes, the legislature has to rubber stamp an extension on crossbow hunting during the archery season, but I just don't think there's any opposition to stop that from happening. So
I will say most of the people I know that bought crossbows and took them out into the field to hunt with it love it. They think it's absolutely fantastic, fun. It's accurate. They feel real confident when they squeeze that trigger, and they're really enjoying it. So, yeah, I think it's a sport that's probably going to grow, and I hope that these archery shops take advantage of the situation and figure out ways of getting these crossbow enthusiasts more involved in, like you said, maybe some leagues and having some fun just renting space and shooting their bows.
Yeah, I don't dispute anything you just said. Eric Morgan was telling me he heard about a new crossbow that shoots accurately to like 150 yards. I mean, that's just, you know, that's a whole other topic. Maybe we'll research that some more and talk about it more next week, Tim, because we're out of time. Thank you for spending a segment with me, and we'll talk to you next week.
We'll catch up to you soon.
That's our buddy Tim Lesmeiser. Thank you to him, all of our other guests. Thanks to the listeners who joined us for the past hour. I hope everybody has a great week out of doors. I'm Rob Gerisine signing off for Outdoor News Radio. Missed a segment from this week's edition of Outdoor News Radio? You can hear a podcast of the complete program at OutdoorNews.com or via your favorite podcast streaming platforms. And for the rest of the story on the topics we cover here on the program, get yourself or a friend a subscription to Outdoor News. Just visit OutdoorNews.com. And don't forget to join us next week on this station to talk everything out of doors.